Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. This Thursday, we got a NFL game that I would jump all over. Bill's brother Gerard would be upset at me, but I got to tell you, Tampa Bay, -3.5 at the Bears. I would go Tampa Bay, Tom Brady all day. So jump on that. And then on Sunday, the Arizona Cardinals are -7 at the New York Jets. And if you've been paying attention to the Jets, I would take almost anybody in any line that they're playing against. So I would jump on Tampa Bay and Arizona this week in the NFL. So from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. And there's always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. I'm up here in an undisclosed location, upstate New York. Stay away. And we got hey, listen, man, it's no joke. And we got my friend and co-host, great Jamal Murphy, handling things down at Brooklyn. What's up, Murph?
I'm good, man. Out here in quiet, sunny Brooklyn, everything's great. Glad to be back.
And of course, we've got a friend of the show, as they say in the business, the great Zach Lowe, who's joining us from here. We'll let him tell you if he wants to disclose where he is. But great Zach Lowe is my colleague at ESPN. He's a senior writer for ESPN and host of the most popular, maybe the most popular show on the network, The Lowe Post, Zach Lowe. Zach. Not Zoe. Hey, Zach, how you doing, man? Thanks for coming on.
I'm good. We're going to keep the location undisclosed location.
There you go. That's the best way to go, brother, because, you know, you just never know, man. You know, POTUS 45 has kind of set the tone that, you know, don't be afraid, nothing to worry about, okay.
Yeah, okay.
So everything is fine. So I'm like, cool, you know, you don't need to know where I am. So Zach, tell me what you think of the playoffs. So for the finals, man, Lakers just took a 3-1 lead. So, you know, you've been covering this and watching this for ages. Just give us your impressions, man. We'll ask you specific questions later, but just give us your overall impressions of the finals.
I think it's a bummer that, you know, the Heat's three best players all got hurt in game one. You know, Jimmy obviously hasn't missed time, but he tweaked his ankle. You could feel the absence of Goran Dragic last night in game four when they were just searching for something on offense, another option. And he and Bam have been so good on the pick and roll all playoffs long. But I'll tell you, I mean, it's been a really fun series. The adjustments, the zone, no zone, AD suddenly guarding Jimmy Butler, LeBron's on Bam, Bam's back. And I just saw last night – in game four was, I mean, you've covered a million of these, Bill. That's all I want in a finals game. It wasn't pretty, but it was tough. The competition was unbelievable. Both teams had to dig really deep into their bags to find anything that could produce anything like a clean look on offense. And, you know, one team got a few more stops, a few more breaks and gutted it out. But that's what a finals game, you know, that if you're at that game, and it's a real audience, a real crowd and all, those are the kind of games where you feel the tension. And that's what you want out of a game.
Did you feel that? Because I want to get into the, you know, you as a veteran observer, and you've been at finals live and all that. How did you feel? Just, you know, you get the feeling when you're at a big event. And even as reporters, you kind of feel the adrenaline, you feel the excitement. What's been the level of your feeling excitement or tension or competition during during the finals, let's just say.
Well, it started in the conference finals was the first time in the playoffs where I felt, ooh, this is different. Because the conference final, like, first two rounds, there's just games. Like, you don't have time to think about anything. Conference finals is when you get to a point where there's just one game a night. Like, the whole spotlight's on you. The media contingent has doubled in size by that point. The celebrities are coming out. And that was the first time, although the basketball's been unbelievable all the way through, it was the first time where I felt, something's missing now. And when this is over, I leave guys alone during the finals about superfluous questions like this. But when this is over, I am going to ask some of the coaches and players who have been in the finals before, or even some who haven't, how different did it feel? Like, did it feel – when in the middle of the game, did it just start to feel almost like a regular game, or did you were you always aware that it was the finals? Because you're right. Like, I mean, I don't. Were you at Game Seven between Cleveland and Golden State in 2016 when the Cavs won?
No.
That was the game. That's the LeBron block game.
Oh yeah.
That was a game where I felt I've never been in a sporting event that intense, and I don't think. As intense as last night was, I don't know. I don't really think you can recreate that without fans and all that. But it was still a fun game. But it doesn't feel the same.
I have not really articulated this question the right way, but there was a point before the pandemic that I was really getting fed up with fans. You know, quote unquote, not just because I'm a jaded sports writer and I haven't cheered for a team since I was 16, but I was beginning to get fed up with them because the entitlement had become a little too much, fans, the celebrities, you know, the whole thing. And I'm wondering how you feel about fans. Has your attitude toward fans, I mean, have they been on punishment enough now? Do you think they've learned a lesson? have the players fallen, you know, gone from being jaded and don't need them? What's your sense?
What do you mean by entitled? I mean, obviously there are the awful fans who scream terrible offensive things at players, and that has no place in the sport. But like, what do you mean by entitled or what made you?
That's what I meant. I mean, just the and it's not just the extreme fans, you know, who are like awful, just jerks. But you know, to me, a lot of fans, once they go into the arena, they're transformed. And from just being normal, peace-loving people to like think they could say anything, blow off all kinds of steam. The ticket enables me to do all kinds of stuff. And maybe you and I disagree, but that's what I meant with entitlement. Just, you know, from calling into sports talk shows, and particularly you, because you're dealing with the media in a different way. The sports talk shows, I listened to a couple of shows. You have celebrity callers. You know, just fans. This is Kevin from so-and-so. It's the same people. So I don't know, but just again, you could disagree, obviously. And maybe you may think the whole, my premise of my question is just flawed.
Well, I think they're the extreme of fans you talk about, the offensive. I mean, you just put those in a different bucket to me. Those are just people do either bad people or people behaving horribly, and that has no place. You know, I feel it sometimes when, and I've mostly detached from social media now because it's a hard place to be. But you realize that when people say nasty stuff to you, it's often because you have written something not nice about their team, that they're really only in the media landscape for positive coverage, fawning coverage of their teams. And when you don't give that to them, well, you suck and they hate you. But I just think that is such a small, tiny, tiny, tiny people with a minority of people with loud voices. My interactions with fans have always been really good. And I like that people transform at games. Like, to me, that's the point of it all, is like, this is all kind of dumb when you think about it. Like, these are dudes wearing jerseys, yeah, putting a ball in a hoop. Yeah. And yet we feel something because of it. We come together, we chant, we stand. I haven't gotten jaded like that. I can't get there with you.
You mentioned the intensity of the games and how you wanted to find out whether it was the same, but just from watching it, when I watch the games now, I feel like I'm surprised by how intense and how normal the on-court competition feels, and not just basketball. I mean, the U.S. Open, I was watching. They were playing as hard as I've ever seen them. You know, even the NFL. I mean, you can't really tell. For me, I couldn't really tell the difference. But you see some sort of difference, maybe?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. And look, these are the highest level athletes in the world, right? They would compete. They always tell you this. Right? I compete against my brother. I compete against my mom if she stood between me and a championship. They, when the stakes are there, they want to win. They want to win for something that is more intrinsic and bigger to them than money and celebrity. They want to win. I just wonder, I'm almost more curious about the guys who have never been on that stage before. Like Duncan Robinson doesn't know what an NBA Finals game really feels like. I wonder if this is almost an easier introduction to the highest stakes of the NBA than it would be if he's like, man, there's Denzel Washington. The fans are here 3 hours before the game. There's 5 million people waiting to interview me if I miss a shot in the last minute. So I almost am more curious about the guys who have never been to that stage before, if it's easier for them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. It seemed like, I mean, that's what I enjoy, actually, is the purity of the competition now. And I guess I don't want to go too much back and forth on the fan element, but you know, you grew up playing basketball, playing sports and whatever. And it was always like this. It was practice. It was, you know, that's where we really put it on the line because we wanted to impress our teammates, our coaches. It wasn't any of the superfluous stuff, the entertainment value. We were there just to play ball. And maybe to the extent that it's just a one-time only thing, that it seems like we're going to kind of, I think at a time when I think that as a everybody, we need to just get back to basics. This is just about, to me, competition. It's not about Denzel or Spike or, you know, the fan. It's about, hey, listen, we love this game. This is just about playing. Although the reality that billions of people are still watching, there are probably more people are watching ever. So that, I guess that's what I was saying. Do you feel about this specific series in general? What does this do for LeBron? I'm assuming that they're going to win and wrap it up. For leading three different teams to an NBA final, to me, man, that just catapults him almost to the head of the line. Kareem will always be number one, but
I like that you cape for Kareem, the forgotten man in the greatest of all time debate.
Right.
The greatest high school player, the greatest college player.
Right.
You will probably be shocked to know that ESPN's editors are very interested in a Michael Jordan, LeBron James column if the Lakers win this. So I've been thinking a lot about this, and it's interesting that you zeroed in on the three teams thing, because I think I was watching an old clip of The Jump today from 2 years ago when Scottie Pippen and Tracy McGrady were essentially asked this question about, does LeBron in crunch time, can he ever compare to Michael? And it was so interesting to watch, because no matter what statistics Rachel Nichols threw at them, no matter what clips she threw at them, they just couldn't.
Right.
They could not conceive of it
right.
as a legitimate comparison in terms of clutch shooting. They just couldn't get it. It was impossible for them to conceive of. And I think part of that, and you can speak to this too, is I think there's a sense that LeBron upended the traditional order of how sports is supposed to work by switching teams. There's a sense that he was stacking the deck and building super teams in a way that Michael didn't or couldn't.
Couldn't.
I'm not sure really how accurate that is, that front running. I mean, he switched teams. I don't know that he's been on the best team in the most of his, I mean, he faced these Warriors teams all the time. To me, LeBron doing that has always been it. And I said this about Anthony Davis too, and trade demands. That didn't put the balance of power out of whack. It put everyone on an even playing field because the balance of power had been so stacked against players for so long. And even saying that, even if that's true, there are just people who can't. It just feels wrong to them how LeBron did it in a way that I don't share that. I mean, to me, I'm more lean towards you where it's like it's impressive and it's new and it's interesting. But there are certain people who it doesn't – and probably, Bill, in your generation, it just doesn't – those people come from your generation more than mine, I think, that it just feels wrong somehow, right?
Yeah, because you were used to being in prison. I mean, you were used to being, it was like volunteer slavery, volunteer indentitude. That, you know, I mean, you know, throughout most of my, you know, players were there for, that was it. You're with New York and you're there until New York gets tired of you. Now you're free. And I agree with you, man. I mean, I think that it just evened the playing field. You know,
all the trade demand, people get so mad when players request trades. All that does is even out the balance of power between teams and players. Like, they're exercising the same right that teams do all the time with players.
All the time. I mean, you know, if you look at our profession, I went from the Afro-American newspaper to Ebony Magazine to the Baltimore Sun to the New York Times.
Front runner. You're a front runner.
Yeah, right. What's going on, Bill?
Why are you leaving Afro to go to the Ebony? You stay right there until we decide to fire you. Or right. What, you know. So, you know, Matt, to me, and then just, again, you know, Kareem kind of did it. Remember Kareem? Well, you know,
he went to the Lakers.
That. Yeah,
he demanded a trade.
He was in Milwaukee. And he said, "You know what? I'm out of here. Right. You know, I'm out of here. I need to go to L.A." Go ahead.
No, I really think the Kareem LeBron comparison is the best, because when it's all said and done, the LeBron's numbers are going to dwarf everyone else's. You know, in terms of career numbers, points, rebounds, assists. Like, if you never saw LeBron play, you go look at those numbers, you're going to be like, oh, of course he was the best player ever. The Michael Jordan thing is the dominance, the almost six straight when he was in the league championships. And then the narrative, how he paid his dues and got beaten down, you know, for the beginning of his career and finally made it to the championship. So I don't think, if you saw the Michael Jordan era, it's hard. I can't say that LeBron is better than Michael Jordan, having seen them both and seen, you know, the extraordinary things that Jordan.
But can you articulate why, though?
Yeah, right. Exactly. No.
I could try. You know, I could say, you know, Jordan was the killer, like the killer mentality, like you know, just the whole aura about him. The points, he was the guy that took the shot from, well, not really. He made a couple passes.
Okay.
You sound like Tracy and Scotty, and I get it. Cause I grew up, I'm 43 years old. I was a teenager when Michael was doing that, and he seemed indomitable. He seemed impossible to beat. And I think not only the switching teams thing sort of colors this discussion in a way that is unquantifiable, frankly, but Michael has this sheen of perfection. 6-0 in the finals, never got beat on the biggest stage. Only teams that eliminated him in the playoffs were the 80s Celtics and the Bad Boys Pistons. That's it.
Right.
And LeBron, even if you want to throw out the Warriors series and the first Cleveland series where he just took a team that was not very good and single-handedly got them to a matchup they weren't ready for, he's got that Dallas series where he just didn't show up. And Michael doesn't have anything like that. And I think just in some way that even if people don't specifically even remember or think about that Dallas series,
right,
LeBron has a vague imperfection about him to fans that Michael does not have.
But isn't that fair? Isn't it fair to bring up that Dallas series?
No, absolutely. You have to bring it up. It's a black mark on his career. And if he's going to pass Michael, it's going to be the sheer number of trips to the championship. And the sheer, as you pointed out, the statistical case is going to be overwhelming because he's going to have to overcome that he had a finals where he scored 8 points in an NBA finals game. Michael's all-time low for points in a finals game is 22.
Right. Well, what tips the thing to me, and again, this gets sort of so where your sociology is, what tips the scale to me is, what did you do with your mantle? Now, a lot of people, if you say, we're just doing basketball, then that. But to me, you know, Kareem, the guy was a public intellectual. He wrote, 17 books. He's done documentaries. He's been and he's also just stood up for black people and people in general. LeBron, you know, Michael Jordan's message to a whole generation of athletes, particularly black athletes, is shut the fuck up. Just play ball, take the money, shut up, and play. Don't stand for anything except for Nestle's or pantyhose or Coca-Cola, Nike, Pep. That's the only thing you stand for. Other than that, just play ball. And I think that LeBron has sort of you know, giving players a voice. He's saying, "No, man, you ain't got to do that. You know, you don't. You could stand up and be counted. Your wealth could be liberated." So to me, that matters.
Well, and not only that, I mean, the off court stuff is a whole different discussion. The dude opened a school, like a fully functioning school.
Right.
Like I even, you know, I opened a carton of milk today. That's the only thing I've opened. But you know, on the court, I think LeBron told the rest of the superstar players, "We make the league. This is our league.
Right.
You are the one that is irreplaceable. The owner is replaceable. The coach is replaceable. The GM's replaceable. You aren't. And if you want to take a one-year deal or a series of one-year deals and hold your team hostage and exercise your power to get the kind of moves that you want, go ahead and do it. Because you know what? You don't have – the NBA is not necessarily set up for you to exert that kind of leverage the way that teams have leverage over you and trade talks and restricted free agency and all this. But that's a point of leverage you have. Don't be afraid to use it. And a number of superstars have done the same thing. And LeBron is right. The top 10 players in the league, they are the league. They drive winning. They are the whole beginning, middle, and end of the story. And he has exerted his influence in Cleveland, mostly in Cleveland, frankly, in that way.
But also, that's actually a good point, if you just keep it on the court in terms of empowering players. But, you know, what I also find, he's taken three different franchises. He energized, he totally reinvented Cleveland. He goes to Miami, and although they had won once, but he basically made them sort of a superpower. Now you go to L.A., and he now re-energized what's been a tremendous legacy. You know,
Let's be frank, Bill. He built the team. Yeah. More than the Lakers built this team, he and his agent built it.
Right.
His agent Rich Paul represents Anthony Davis. LeBron went there because he wanted to play for the Lakers. And then they got Anthony Davis out of New Orleans. I mean, he built this. That's not exactly fair because the Lakers drafted a lot of guys. They traded for Anthony Davis. They have Caruso. They made a lot of moves on the fringes. But really, to some degree at least, they built the team.
Could Jordan have done that? I don't know what the rules were at the time. But if he wanted to, could he have done that? When he went to Washington, it was over by that time. But could he have done that? Did he have
the power?
Yeah, did he have the
you know, given the money at that time, you know, nobody was taking like short-term contracts like LeBron started doing in Cleveland. Like stars just weren't doing that. And the CBA was set up for you to take longer-term contracts. And the minute you sign for that 5-6 year contract, that let that kind of leverage disappears, right? I mean, like Scottie Pippen is the classic example that I couldn't get out of his contract for years and years. It's a good question though. If he had to do his career over again, by the end, I think in the second three-peat, he was signing these like 1 year, $30 million deals. So and then it all fell apart. So,
Just touching on these finals, is it over? Do you give the Heat any chance?
I give anybody any chance. I don't say no chance. I'll tell you this though. I mean, I don't think the Heat are a typical down 3-1 team. Like they are when they were down 2-0, everybody, and I include myself, all of the discussion was who's going to win Finals MVP, LeBron or Anthony Davis. And the Heat came out and were like, screw that. Yeah, we don't have two of our best players. We're going to try to win. And then they won, and they almost won again last night. So, like, would it blow me away if they got to game 6? No. Would it blow me away if they won 3 games in a row? Yes, that would blow me away. But everything feels different game to game. Like if they just win one more game, all of a sudden going into game 6, it's like maybe they have a chance. Oh my God, it's DEFCON 1 for LeBron. But to win 3 straight is a really tall order.
Do you think people are giving, listen, I was going to say giving the Heat enough credit, but are taking as seriously as they should the absence of Goran Dragic? I mean, he was their leading scorer when he went out with injury. So it's like baffling to me that the Heat even could win a game in this series, you know, and then they didn't have Bam Adebayo for two and a half games. How have the Heat done this? Like, did they come from?
I was shocked that they got, I didn't think they were going to get game 3. I mean, honestly, like to win a game without your second and third best players and Bam has been arguably their best player in the playoffs. Actually Jimmy has surpassed him the way Jimmy's played now, but, they did it because they play super hard. They don't make mistakes. And You know, it's funny, for a game or two, you surround Jimmy Butler with four shooters, even though, like, in the long run, you're a worse team, right? You're a worse team with Kelly Olynyk and Myers Leonard playing Bam Adebayo's minutes. There's no question about that. But you can catch lightning in a bottle for a game or two with that kind of formula if you play enough defense. And they did. And, right. And you know, Jimmy with four shooters around him is really powerful.
What level do you think Butler's on? I mean, to me, the greatest thing Butler has done is that great the great beer commercial where they have that great R&B song, This Love That I'm Giving You. This
yes. was so weird.
I followed it, and all these people were there. I mean, I've been playing that song like every day. And I said to a friend of mine, like, you know, and he's, oh, yeah, man, this is a jam I listen to all the time. This Love I'm Giving You. I did. So I said, thank you, Jimmy Butler, for that, for leading me to This Love by the Joy Tones. but where do you put him? Where do you put Butler in the pantheon? You know, I guess the more I watch Butler, the more I appreciate Jordan and LeBron. You know, got Jim Brown, guys who, you know, when everybody spends all their time stopping you at every game, you know, where do you put Butler?
I think for the last 3 or 4 years, he's been something like, depending on the year, between the 8th and 12th best player in the NBA. I think he's probably still around there, maybe towards the higher end now, as a couple of guys that were above him, like Russ, I think, has fallen off a little bit. You know, it's funny, we have these debates, and sometimes they're a little facile, and one of them is like, well, who can be the best player on a championship team? Can this guy be the best player on a championship team? Can that guy be the best? He can, he can't. And for a long time, I think Butler fell a little bit below, like, whatever that group is, he was like the next notch below it. And I, you know, like I said, I don't think they're going to come back and win this finals, but they got within 3 wins currently right now of a championship, despite those injuries we talked about. Like, those debates get pretty blurry when you get down to it. They depend on roster construction. They depend on some luck and this and that. Like, maybe he could be the number one option on a championship team because he damn near almost was, right. I mean, or almost is, depending on how this series turns out. You know, we know who the guys that definitely are. Like, right. we know who those guys are. Those are easy questions to answer. One of them is about to win his fourth championship. But, you know, Jimmy's an interesting guy. That basketball is interesting like that. Just when you think you got it figured out in these black and white debates, it gets a little messy on you.
Where do you think Anthony Davis is? What does this do? You know, I was happy, given the Lakers thing from to Mikan, to Chamberlain, to Jabbar, to Shaq. You know, I thought, I guess when I started losing respect for Dwight when he came to L.A., and he basically told Kobe, no, that's not what I don't see myself that way. What do you think this does for Davis in terms of legacy and echelon and all that?
Well, I mean, he still has a chance to win finals MVP, I think. There's no question that it vaults him into a different category. But it's interesting when you think about the game, like, could Anthony Davis be the number one option on a championship team? I still don't know the answer to that. It still may well be no. But I think about this with Scottie Pippen a lot, too. We don't know if Scottie Pippen could. He never was. He probably couldn't have been. Right. But the way basketball works, if you're the very, very, very best kind of number two option, like if you're a great passer, great defender, you're just not the number one guy shot creating, you can be a more valuable player than someone who might be better fit to be the quote-unquote number one option. Like Jimmy Butler may be better fit to be the number one option in an offense than Anthony Davis is. But if I'm building a championship team, Anthony Davis may be quote unquote better than Jimmy Butler. You know what I mean? Like Scottie Pippen is the absolute apex number two option. He's a better player, I think, than some guys who were able to be number one options on teams that didn't get anywhere serious.
Let's talk about the bubble and the overall picture. Like, how, you know, now we're getting to the end of the season. We can look back on it and really, you know, analyze and in my opinion, appreciate what the NBA did, you know, with this bubble. Right.
The more you look at the NFL, the more you appreciate what the NBA is doing.
Yeah, when you look at other sports, I mean, you gain even greater appreciation of what the NBA has done. Now, you didn't go to the bubble. What was your reasoning as far as that goes?
very boring reasons. We had some family stuff we had to do, and I didn't want to leave my wife in the lurch. And then I thought about going for the finals, but the way they have it set up is you have tier two or whatever the tier, the second tier, where you basically just get to go to the games and sit in the upper deck, and you're not in the bubble. You stay at a different hotel.
Right.
So like, to me, there was no point in that. Tier one is when you quarantine, you live in the bubble, you get to interview the players. And there are a very limited number of spots for that. If I could have, if I would have gone, I would have had to have displaced somebody who had been there the whole time. And I did not obviously want to do that. So I just chose just a totally mundane reasons, nothing that interesting.
So when you look at what the NBA has done, you know, what comes to your mind? What are your thoughts on the success or, you know, whatever you would call it of the bubble?
Well, I mean, I remember in April, May, a lot of the discourse was this is unethical for them to even try it, and it's right. going to fail, and it's going to be a disaster, and they're putting the players in danger. And I always, and I said this repeatedly on my podcast, I always thought that was a little bit misguided, because it seemed to me pretty likely that players would be safer and staff would be safer there than in the regular world. And none of this happens without the players voting for it. The player, right. It's not like the players were passive recipients of this policy. They had to actively, now, obviously the financial consequences perhaps swayed them and, you know, leveraged them, but and the NBA is going to turn out to be right in that regard. I will say though, that if the NBA wants to get triumphalist about it and crow about how much better they did than other sports, they had the advantage of we're 80% through our season
right,
anyway.
Exactly.
They didn't have to do a full season. You could not do a full season this way, which is why next season is ultimately going to be the challenge. But the calendar did them favors that it did not do the other sports.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's actually a great point, because I was thinking about the NFL doing that. And to say that to go from now until January right. to just live lives in maybe even four different bubbles is just, I mean, even frankly, Zach, even, you know, I think maybe if I was your age, maybe I would have like campaigned to go to the bubble just as an experiment. But I'm just thinking, man, people should get a medal.
Because there are people who've been there 110 days by
that's
the time
unbelievable.
This is over. Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable. I'm just trying. There's not that much amusement in the world. You know, can I take some ride? Can I go on a space ride every day? I mean, how many times can you do that? But no, it's just pretty. But I guess the question is, do you think this is better basketball? I'm trying to get away. I've been getting away from binary decisions. But do you think that this is a tougher championship to win?
I don't think it's anything. I don't think it's tougher or not tougher. I just think it is. It's its standalone thing. But the basketball has looked like regular playoff basketball to me. I'm not there. You know, I do think the bubble probably affected certain teams more than others in terms of strain and anxiety and all that. But I don't think I'm just going to think of it as a championship. I don't think it's any worse. I certainly don't think there's an asterisk or anything like that. And I don't know that I'm going to think of it as like the absolute crowning achievement of the LeBron's career if they end up winning it. Because I just think it's just a championship, and maybe that's the best compliment you can give the NBA, that it just feels like a championship.
Why don't you think it'd be the crowning thing of his career?
It's hard to beat Cleveland, 54-year drought, beating a 73-win team. It's hard to beat that.
Right, right.
That's true. What about the rest of what happened in the bubble? You had, you know, all kind of social justice messages on the court, on the uniforms. You had players very outspoken. You had the Milwaukee Bucks boycott or strike, whatever you want to call it. How do you think we look back on all of those things in a couple of years?
I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if we really look back or if it's just sort of part of an ongoing story that continues to evolve, because I think players are not going to stop advocating for social justice and against police brutality and all of those things. As we go forward, particularly depending on how this election goes. But, you know, look, it's actually been interesting to me, and I'd be, as a longtime journalist, Bill, I'd be interested in your take on it. It's been very interesting to me to see how TV ratings have become such a media story now. Like, there's as much coverage of the TV ratings as there is of like basketball. And I think there seems to be a rush without a whole lot of proof to pin the decline of TV ratings on, well, the NBA has alienated conservative viewers or whatever, whereas there's like 9 million other confounding variables that are probably affecting this. But I don't ever recall TV ratings being a story like this. And I'm not reading a lot of the same stories about like hockey or what whatever else. It's that that has been strange to me. But in terms of what it's, I mean, these are necessary discussions. We have to have them as a nation. It's kind of sad that the players have to be the ones to drive them and get them and like, you know, pull people to contribute money and all this. But it is what it is, I guess.
It's interesting you bring up the ratings because I saw a stat the other day saying, you know, that the NBA ratings are down, but so like you said, the NHL ratings are 65% down. The US Open ratings were 50% down.
WNBA ratings are up.
I've been watching WNBA, so it makes sense to me.
Yeah, a lot of people are watching a lot of stuff. I mean, because of the pandemic, a lot
all
of people
the sports are
watching
are on at the same time. Baseball playoffs are on. The NBA playoffs are on. Right. Football's on.
Or people are not watching a lot of stuff because of the pandemic. I mean, we don't, you know, like when we're not used to having the finals in October. We're not used to, you know, different, do we know what channels everything is on? I was looking for baseball last night. No idea where, you know, what channel stuff.
I'm even watching baseball.
I barely know what time of year it is at this point. Like everything is so weird. It's like, it's October. It's like, I don't know what the hell is going on.
Do you like this calendar? Do you like, what would you like the NBA to go back to the regular calendar? Do you like, would you like maybe an alteration in the calendar?
as a parent?
Yeah.
Speaking purely selfishly, I really like the old calendar because if we start playing in the summer and you got school age kids, you are never taking a family vacation again as long as you can.
Right.
So purely selfishly, I like the old calendar. Well, it's going to be a while before we get back there, but I hope we do. We'll see.
And what about next season? How is next season going to look? I mean, from what you know now, in terms of when it starts, what it's going to look like, we don't know. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't see the pandemic being gone anytime soon. So I know we're not going to do it like this again next year, but could there be multiple bubbles? What do you have any idea?
I think all that's in play. I think the NBA really would envision a regular schedule, but with much less travel. So maybe teams play, you know, their division rivals way more times than usual or whatever it is. But, you know, I think I've heard the same thing that others have written, which is I think Martin Luther King Day is getting pretty optimistic as a starting point, or maybe realistic and optimistic at the same time. I just think the NBA gets into a little trouble. Like you said, I mean, they really want fans, right? They really want some fans. Do you wait until March, April? Like, what if you start waiting and things get worse, and all of a sudden it's like we just got to start this season? Like it's you know, I think you can outsmart yourself a little bit trying to wait on something that is completely unpredictable. If you want to get your season in a certain block of the calendar where it feels normal-ish to you, forget about the Olympics. I mean, Adam Silver's already said probably not going to stop for the Olympics. So,
yeah. What are you going to do after this is over, which is going to be either way in a few days?
It's going to be weird, right? Because usually you have the draft like 5 days after the finals, and now we're going to have more than a month before the draft. Free agency is kind of TBD. I would suspect it starts around December 1st. So, and then once you get the free agency, you're like already going to be in camp pretty soon after that. So I think it's the next month that is going to be interesting. Maybe I'll get into the draft. I haven't gotten into the draft really ever in my career. I punt that for the draft next. Maybe I'll start watching Tyrese Halliburton or whoever these people are.
Our guest has been the great Zach Lowe. He's a host of the Lowe Post, a wonderful podcast. He's also a senior writer for ESPN. Before we let you go, I had the question all set up. Now I forgot. I just celebrated a big birthday. Maybe I don't know if that's kicking in.
Happy birthday.
I asked you, what are you doing from here? Oh, has this journalistically, has this made What have you learned? I think, I don't know, maybe we spoke about this on your podcast, but has this made your gig better? Have you found out some stuff about it that you like, that you're going to keep?
I don't know. I don't think it's made it. I mean, I'm lucky that I've been doing this long enough now that I have a lot of contacts that if I don't see people in person for a long time, I can suffice with, you know, phone and text and all that. It's made me realize how much of your brain is always sort of thinking about logistics that I haven't had to think about. What time's the flight? Where do I got to be? How am I getting there? What hotel am I at? Does the hotel have good Wi-Fi? If it doesn't, what's my backup plan? Like, all that's been, like, my brain's been able to think about lots of other stuff. But at the same time, and I think, you know, this is something that maybe is getting lost in journalism a little bit, and you know this well, there is just no substitute, none, no matter how connected you are and Zoom and all this, there is no substitute for, hey, let's go get a beer with the coach after the game and, right, and talk not talk for 90 minutes over a beer. There's just no duplicating that. And that is, I miss that. And that's where you get the good stuff. That's where the real relationships develop. And so that's, if I can't have that for an extended period of time, at some point it's going to become like, I need it, you know?
Right. I guess it kind of, in a negative way, kind of levels the playing field in a way, in that, right, you know, nobody can do that.
Yeah.
But then it still is your contacts. Who can you pick up the phone and talk? But you're right. It's nothing like a leisurely thing. Let's just kind of hang out and just really talk.
Well, I think Hunter S. Thompson was the one who said, nobody tells the truth from 9 to 5. You got to get them after 5. You know, there is a little, that's a little cynical for my taste, but there is a kernel of truth to that.
Sounds right to me.
Hey, listen, Zach Lowe, this is great, man. This is, always love your insights, whether it's with us on Bros Pod or your own, podcast. So thank you so much, man. And, your prediction, you think that this is it?
How many games?
Yeah.
My initial prediction for the series was Lakers in 6 before everybody got injured. Up 3-1, LeBron smells it. Mm. I just think they find a way to get over the finish line in game 5. So I'll pivot to Lakers in 5.
That's fair. I'm kind of ready.
Especially with all the injuries, you know, can't hold you to that original.
Just when you get to the finish, you could see it last night in his demeanor, in what he told his teammates. Like, when you get that close, you just, the great ones find a way to the one, whatever it is, a stop, a rebound, they find a way to take the last step.
Right. Yeah. Then after Butler's 40th, everybody's talking about Butler and hero and this and that. So, oh man, God, that's like raving the red cap. You see the one play where he ducked over,
he threw hero, or hero might have flopped across the court. I don't know which one it was.
I mean, that's what would happen to me. If I were in front of LeBron at a fast break, I would fly 30 feet and get dunked on. And that was powerful. And maybe a little bit of a flop. But what else is Tyler Hero supposed to do?
Either way, it would have looked the same, I think.
I got a long career here.
Right.
Hey, Zach, thanks so much, man. Enjoy you and continue to be safe. And we will see you down the road, as they say.
My pleasure, guys. It's an honor, and stay safe, and hopefully we all get to see each other in person at some point.
And we'll have that beer.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Zach.
Take care. Thanks, guys, man. That was fun. Thanks for having me.
So,
what else is going on, Bill?
You know, the NFL, man. I mean, now you got more Tennessee Titans who have tested positive.
Right.
Cam is out. I'm just wondering, and that's the problem, when you allow people to leave the stadium and go into their lives. I mean,
yeah, you have to do something. You have to try something. I know that they, you know, they're doing not little things. They're doing some things in terms of making people wear masks, which is good, you know, on the sidelines, and the coaches have to wear masks, but you have to do something to limit travel. You just have to limit the entire operation in some way. Otherwise, you know, what are you really doing? Even Major League Baseball has started to understand that with the playoffs and having it at a neutral site where, you know, they can they can contain things a little better. So I just don't think, if you don't make an effort to do something like that, I don't see how it doesn't end up to be a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, no, man. I mean, the bubble thing works. But like Zach was saying, you can't, NFL, you're going to put people in a bubble from September to January. I guess what they could say is, if once you get eliminated, then you can leave the bubble.
Right.
Well, once you're out of the race.
At least in the Major League Baseball, even before the playoffs, they limited travel. Remember, they only played their division, or the American League would play the AL East would play the NL East or something like that. NFL didn't even do that.
Yeah. It's kind of like POTUS 45-ish.
Right. Which we predicted would be.
Yeah, they're going to, you know, the owners are all, you know, POTUS 45 supporters. They're all playing to say nothing wrong. Right. Just go ahead and play. Right. And consequences be damned.
In that case, Cam, why doesn't Cam act like 45 and just come back and play? Like, I did it. Look, I can survive.
That's right. That's right. I did it. No problem here.
You just breathe a little heavy. That's all.
Yeah. Maybe have a ventilator on the side. Were they like, yeah, in the winter they have heat warmers. Now, yeah, like ventilators. Right.
That's what Trump would have done. You know, that's what he says.
I got a ventilator right here. Brand new, as a matter of fact. Invest in it. It's my brand. Right.
Made in China.
Hey. You know, he'll say at the end of the day, we're all partners. We're all in this together.
Yes, of course. Of course. Of course.
All right. Well, listen, man, unless you have anything else to, talk about, complain about, any complaints?
No. I'll hold off. I'll hold off till next week.
All right. So what do you think? You think the play is it? Do you think that the Lakers are in like Flynn?
Yeah, I think that's it. You know, I respect Miami totally. I definitely could see Miami winning the next game for sure and pushing it to six. But I don't see the Lakers. I just don't see LeBron and Anthony Davis losing three straight. That's not happening.
Yeah, yeah. No matter how much they, need the money. I don't know. Does it help if it goes – does it help them recoup money if it goes seven?
Maybe, but I think LeBron and AD probably have more incentive to get the hell out of the bubble.
Get the hell out of the bubble. I know. How weird do you think that's going to be when they get out the bubble and go home? What do you think that's like?
I mean, you had WNBA players I saw quoted as, when like teams that were losing, like they were scared to go home. They were scared to leave the bubble.
I know. We're probably safer here.
Yeah.
Than and remember they are out there.
And remember we had Mark, I was looking at this clip today. We had Mark Spears on the show in March. He was saying, I don't know what you guys are talking about. People keep telling me to be safe. I'm in the safest place there is. Right. And it turned out he was right.
That's right.
At the time, we were like, oh, well, let's wait and see.
That's right,
He turned out to be 100% because that bubble is necessary.
That's right. Well, you stay safe. Keep the Sam family safe. And everybody out there, our millions of listeners, stay safe, man. Don't be idiotic out there.
Keep the mask on. Keep your distance.
I know to many of you, it's like, what's the fuss? Because you probably don't know anybody's got the sick. You don't know anybody's got, so you figure you're tempted to say, what's the big deal? And trust me, you don't want to find out what the big deal is.
Exactly.
All right, Brother Murphy, I'll see you down the road. And all our listeners, just stay safe. God bless. Later.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.